and welcome. This is the American Journal of Gastroenterology podcast, and I'm Millie Long, co-editor-in-chief of AJG. And with me today as my guest, I have Dr. Anand Kulkarni from EIG Hospital, who recently presented in American Journal a new randomized controlled trial called the STASH trial that looked at infections and standard or tapered dose of prednisolone for alcohol-associated hepatitis. So welcome, Anand. Thank you so much for being here for the podcast.
Thank you, Professor Long, for having me here.
Well, we were thrilled to be able to publish this randomized controlled trial in that it has such great implications for clinical practice. You know, obviously, here in the U.S., as I'm sure in India, we're seeing more and more alcohol-associated hepatitis, and best practices for managing this are so important in terms of a condition like this, which has such high morbidity and mortality. So if you don't mind, let's just start off by talking us through the design of your study and what the main findings were.
So we started this study because we see a lot of alcoholic hepatitis patients in the year as well. But the unique thing in India, especially where the burden of MDR is pretty high, we see a lot of infections post-steroids. This is also common post-transplant for these patients. So we had published previously that when these patients undergo transplant, they develop all kinds of fungal infections. So the motive of here, current study, a STASH study, was a multicenter randomized open-label trial where we had two groups. One first group received the fixed dose, which is the recommended dose of 40 milligrams for 28 days, against tapering dose, that's 40 mg for first week, followed by 30 mg if they respond, then 20 mg for the third week and 10 mg for the fourth week. So this was a centrally randomized study. Four centers were from India. I thanked my colleagues also, Dr. Arab and Dr. Suprabha, Dr. Karan, Dr. Madhumita, and who have been very kind to provide the data to us. Based on this, we conducted a multicenter study, and we noted that there is a reduction in the infections. There is a good number of infections which have been reduced. 19% in the tapering dose developed infections at day 90, while around 33% in the fixed dose developed infections. So this is a main finding what we had in the STASH trial of STASH 1 trial of the current AGG publication.
That's quite a significant difference, obviously, 33% versus 19% of infections. And these were pretty serious infections as well. Is that correct?
Yes, pretty serious infections. Most of them required hospitalization and broad spectrum antibiotics. Although the resolution of infection was early because we were picking up pretty easily because they were on regular follow-up with us. But this may not be true everywhere because once the patient develops infection, they may not be under your regular follow-up. So a regular follow-up post-initiation of steroids is very much important.
And it seems like, it's importantly, obviously, you were assessing the infectious outcomes, which were dramatically different and improved associated with the tapering dose. But overall, you also looked at the overall mortality, correct? And so I guess the concern would be, was there any difference in the mortality outcomes for those with the longer course of prednisone as compared to the tapered course?
The mortality was not that different. It's a great question, actually. So the reason what we found probably is the early identification of infection was one of the crucial things in both the groups. So even in the fixed dose group, we were able to pick them early, ask them to get hospitalized. So that's one of the reasons because we did not see any difference in the mortality as such. And in the recent years, while we considered that the mortality of patients with alcohol-associated hepatitis is more than 50%, this has drastically come down. And a recent, I think there are multiple papers from U.S. as well, that the mortality is hardly at 15 to 20% in the recent times.
Yeah, well, thankfully, my goodness, but still obviously significant morbidity and mortality.
Yeah.
If we were applying this in clinical practice, is this all comers with alcohol-associated hepatitis? I think that you looked at a pretty severe population coming in based on their MADRS gurnet function and or their MELD score. Is that correct?
Yes. So we previously had shown in the multicenter cohort study in JHEP saying that MELD between 25 to 39 are the ones who will be benefited from corticosteroids. Mm-hmm. So we chose a patient with a mean MELD of somewhere around 25 and DF was around 80. And these are quite sick patients, but we did not start steroids on the first day itself. We usually wait. We monitor them, start them on nutrition, wait for 3-4 days, and then initiate the corticosteroids.
Okay, so that's really important, obviously, because you're wanting to rule out something infectious.
Infections, yes.
Well, and that kind of aligns with our clinical practice as well. You want in that first 72 hours or so to ensure there's no infection and then initiate the corticosteroids. What other, you know, are there other pearls that you learned from this study that may help individuals who are managing this, you know, this complex patient population? Certainly, it seems like those with the appropriate MELD score after ruling out infection should be on a tapered dose of steroids and not continued high-dose steroids. Any other pearls that you learned associated from the complications the patients had?
So these patients, they usually do not mount fever. They just come with weakness when they have an infection. So that is one unique thing which we noted and we have changed our practice. If a patient comes with just sudden onset weakness or fatigue, easy fatigability, apart from dyslectulitemia, infection can be found in these patients. So for patients, and also many of these patients who received corticosteroids had presented with bleeding per rectum. But this probably is because of the inhibition of the prostaglandin synthesis. If these individuals have hemorrhoids or something, they usually tend to bleed after 8 to 10 days of corticosteroids.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's a great point about not mounting a fever. You know, obviously you can see that in some degree with ulcerotics, but particularly individuals on corticosteroids, that's a key point, I think, for all of us, that any change in symptomatology, even something like fatigue, should make you think about infectious complications. Now, were any of these patients on any kind of antibiotic prophylaxis? How did that influence your outcomes?
So this protocol, since it was a multicenter study, many did not agree that they would not give antibiotics. So most of the patients, almost 50 to 60%, were on antibiotics in both the groups. But the addition of antibiotics did not make any difference, actually. It was actually when we did a competing risk regression analysis with the addition of N-acetylcysteine, which was shown previously in the NEJM study to reduce infections. That did not affect any outcome. And the addition of antibiotics as well did not have any impact on the incidence of infections.
Well, that's good to hear. Obviously, I think many of us have concerns about overuse of antibiotics and then the potential role that that could play with, you know, other complications like fungal infections, et cetera. So it sounds like that did not play a role. And really, it seems like the only factors that truly played a role were this tapering of the steroids versus fixed dose. Is that correct?
Yes. We did multiple competing risk regression analysis, adjusting for age, severity scores, and the use of concomitant therapies, including the N-acetylcysteine, antibiotics, albumin therapy. But that did not change any course. It was the tapering of steroids which had an impact on the outcomes. And we actually have changed our practice as well, because we now do not give any antibiotic to these patients. They're worried because of the increasing risk of AMRs as well in India.
No, I think that this is great. So it sounds like this has clinically changed your practice, as potentially it will here in our practices here in the U.S. as well. So you're no longer giving prophylactic antibiotics and you're doing a tapered dose of corticosteroids. And it sounds like heightened awareness that you don't necessarily need a fever to have a complication such as an infection.
Yes. And to continue on this, we also have planned a STASH-2 trial. Because here we found that the average duration of steroid therapy was around 20 days, and the infection rate was around 33%. So what we are now doing is comparing 7 days versus 14 days of prednisolone. That will further reduce infections and probably will not have any impact on the outcomes of AAH.
Oh, that's great. So with the hypothesis that even shorter dose of corticosteroid may yield the benefit, but have even less in terms of the complications that you saw.
Yes. And also, we have not used any of these concomitant therapies in this, and it's a completely double-blind randomized trial.
Oh, that's great. Well, hopefully we'll learn a lot more from STASH-2 as well. I think that, you know, this is what we look for in the American Journal of Gastroenterology, as our listeners know, is we really try to publish clinically actionable work that you can take to your practice tomorrow. And I think, you know, all of us see alcohol-associated hepatitis in our practices, and I think this can really change outcomes. I think obviously you and I, many of us, when we trained, we were taught, you know, differently in terms of duration of corticosteroid use. So I think this will be an important change to improve outcomes for our patients.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Arda. And I'm actually grateful to AGG. They have been publishing all the clinically relevant articles. Most of them actually have direct impact on our clinical practice. It's probably widely read journal in the US and across the world.
Well, we so appreciate you publishing with us, and thank you again for sharing the pearls from your recent randomized control trial. We certainly look forward to learning more from the STASH-2 trial. But thanks so much for your time this morning and participating in the AJG podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Long.